Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. Starting a business with the right supports, it's easier than you think. Your host for today is Ms. Barbara McGeehan. Ms. McGeehan, you may begin.
Thank you, Alma. Good evening, everyone. As Alma said, my name is Barbara McGeehan, and I am the Director of Employment Programs and Services at the New York City Southern New York Chapter. I'd like to welcome everyone to the final call in our 2010 Employment Teleconference Series. Starting your own business with the right supports, it's easier than you think. We would like to thank EMD Serono for their sponsorship of this program, and the New York City Southern New York Chapter would like to thank the Associates Committee for their sponsorship as well. Joining me as hosts on the call this evening are Steve Nissen, Senior Director of Employment Programs with the National Capital Chapter in Washington, D.C., and Christina Forster, Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. The National Multiple Sclerosis Society is proud to be a source of information about multiple sclerosis. Our comments are based on professional advice, published information, and expert opinion, and are not a recommendation. Please know that this evening's call will be recorded and available to you at the end of the series if you would like. After our speaker has completed her presentation, there will be time for your questions. If you do have questions, please feel free to jot them down during the call so you're prepared to ask them during our Q&A period. Be sure to ask your question completely, as we will be muting your line after your question is asked. Also, try to keep to questions that are relevant to tonight's topic. This will allow us to get to as many questions as possible. We will do our best to get to all the questions, but if time runs out, Steve, Christina, and I will give you our contact information so you can ask us your questions, and we'll do our best to get the answer. Also, at the conclusion of tonight's call, we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate this program. This is a short survey of only 6 questions, so if possible, please stay on the line until the conclusion of the program and answer the questions, as we're always interested in your feedback. Okay, so tonight's call focuses on self-employment, a topic that many people dream about doing but often feel would be too difficult or perhaps just have no idea how to go about it. Our speaker this evening has worked with people with all types of disabilities, even those with very limited skills, who have been able to make that dream possible. She will share with you what you need to consider when thinking about self-employment, the various self-employment options out there, and resources and supports available to you for funding and technical assistance to help make that dream a reality. Our speaker for this evening is Beth Keaton. For the last decade, Beth has provided extensive training and technical assistance throughout the country on self-employment, customized employment, and benefits analysis. During her time on the various self-employment projects, she's developed expertise in all aspects of business plan development and has discovered a particular affinity for financial planning and Social Security benefits analysis. In her recent work with Griffin Hammes Associates, she's worked closely with the state of Florida's Division of Vocational Rehabilitation to coordinate the development and implementation of a self-employment certification curriculum. Beth has served as the point person for this effort and has been actively involved in all aspects of implementation, including developing the training curriculum, training voc rehab vendors, and providing ongoing technical assistance to the voc rehab staff, both state and local vendors and customers. And additionally, Beth works with GHA on several other national projects, all of which are geared toward increasing the quantity and quality of employment outcomes through customized employment. Prior to her work at GHA, Beth worked for the University of South Florida, where she served as project coordinator on numerous state and national projects. And on that note, I will pass this evening's program on to Beth.
Thank you, Barbara, and hello, everyone. It's always a little weird to do really long conference calls where you just talk freely and you can't hear anybody. So I'll try not to crack too many jokes, but hopefully I can keep you entertained for the next 40 minutes or so. I met Barbara, gosh, probably close to a year ago now when we were doing a self-employment seminar in New York in Manhattan, and she was just indicating how much interest there was within your society on self-employment. And there does seem to be a really growing national interest. We're seeing a real trend in the desire and the importance of the different systems supporting self-employment outcomes for people who experience a whole array of disabilities. And so in our work, we're working a lot with the different systems in the states as well as directly with potential entrepreneurs to try to help everybody see where's the interface of entrepreneurship for anyone and the interface of entrepreneurship for individuals who experience disabilities as well. Most of what's involved in launching a business is the same, whether or not you are a person who experiences a disability. But there are some unique considerations for people who do experience disabilities that we want to make sure we're addressing. And there also are some potential resources available for people. So that's what we're going to try and cover today. It's just sort of how you get the process started, which was my understanding of where a lot of people are, is just trying to figure out how you even get going. And then talking a little bit about the different resources that might be available to you. My understanding is that the chapters that I'm talking to today span a whole lot of states, and policy for some of these different agencies varies state to state. So what I'm going to do is just give you an overview of the different systems and then point you in a direction where you could go get your state-specific policy. But if by any chance you're unable to put your hands on it, please let Barbara or Steve or whoever your facilitator is know, and they'll get in touch with me, and I'll try to help you track down the policy. Sometimes agencies are great about putting it right out there front and center, and other times it's a little bit harder to find. So we're going to get started with this thing called the Business Owner Profile, and I believe Barbara emailed this out along with the PowerPoint to everybody. And this is a document that really works for any entrepreneur. There are some considerations in this document that may target consideration of disability-specific considerations, but overall, it's sort of a planning tool that could work for any entrepreneur, and it's going to help you really think through some of the considerations that are more specifically related to your disability that you would really need to think through when you're talking about launching a business. It's broken down into several different sections, and again, the one that we emailed you is blank, so you can fill it in. I'm just going to go over the different sections to help you start to think about what would you do, right? So if you're interested in starting a business and you're trying to figure out how do you get going or how do you pull things together or how do you come up with an idea that actually may be financially viable, that would fit you and be financially viable, what we're trying to do is create a tool for just guiding you through this thinking process. The first section of the business owner profile is what they call a snapshot. And know that when you're looking at this document or when you're filling it out, you don't have to have all the information on day one. It really should be a working tool and something that you're really thinking through. But what you're really trying to do is just get down on paper some of the things that you think would be most important. So the summary of your past work or your business experience, things that you've done before, things where you've demonstrated real skill or aptitude or success, or you've really just enjoyed doing, some of the information about your education or your training or your background. So really trying to get a picture of when you think about who you've been in the workforce or who you would like to be in the workforce, what are the characteristics that you would like to be able to build upon? Right? So you really want to be starting to pay attention to those different characteristics. The next one is to actually outline the different career goals that you might have. And one of the, we did a workshop on this in Iowa with some artists, and artists are always really fun to work with because they have great creative energy and really non-linear thinking processes, and then trying to help them start to think linearly, right, if that's even a word, to how you actually begin to take some of this different creative energy and then tailor it and streamline it in such a way that you can create a business plan from it is something that can be sort of challenging for people. So we were going over this business owner profile, and one of the women said, oh, I get it. This is my silent business partner with me, which I thought was such a great phrase. And that's really what you're trying to do is you're trying to capture what's the most important information for you to use so that this tool can then be your guideline or your yardstick against which you're measuring the different ideas that you have or the different avenues that you're exploring when you're considering what your business would do. So the next section says business and you want to write a general description of the business. It's absolutely fine if when you first start doing this, you don't really know exactly what that business would be. You don't have to have a crystal clear view. It may be that you just have some ideas. You know, I have background in computers, or I have background with human resources. We worked with a nurse down here in Florida who I believe she actually did experience multiple sclerosis, and she was no longer able to be on her feet and running through the hospital all day long. But before she had gotten into nursing, she had done some stuff with human resources, and she's actually started a staffing agency. So she's doing staffing services for hospitals, and she's supplying nurses because she kind of knows both sides of that equation, right? So when she first started looking at this, she didn't necessarily know that that was exactly what she was going to do, but she knew that she had background in these different areas, and she knew that she wanted her business somehow to relate to that. She wasn't looking to go way out of field or way out of her own experience. So again, just capture generally what you're thinking. And then I think it's really helpful to look at the short-term goals and the long-term goals. It's worth considering straight up front what it is that you're hoping to get out of this business. You know, are you hoping to get a business that's actually going to make $200,000 a year and you're going to grow to the point that you have retail locations or locations throughout the state and you're employing, you know, 10, 15, 20 people? Or are you just looking for the kind of business that you can run from your home that's going to bring in a supplemental income stream? There's no right or wrong answer on that. But what you want to do is have a sense of what you want to do, if that makes sense, so that you know what it is your goal is. So again, as you're looking at different ideas, you can come back to this and say, you know, I don't actually think this is a fit. I'm somebody who's happier working for myself, being in charge of my own day, and I don't really want to manage a whole bunch of people. And when I'm looking into this particular business concept, it looks like there's going to be a lot of management, and a lot of that's going to go on throughout the life of the business. So just starting to get a sense of what it is that you're hoping to get out of it, even if you don't know exactly what it is. If you go to any of the workshops that are going on throughout the country right now, as the unemployment rate has hit such a terrible percentage and more people are out of work and looking for work, one of the conversations that people are really having right now is about transferable skills. So how do you take a skill that you had in a particular environment and transfer it to another environment, transfer it to another field, right? You can do the same thing with entrepreneurship. So you can look again at this work history and say, how do these skills potentially translate in the running of my own business? So, you know, I managed huge accounts for the firm that I worked for, and I was in charge of, you know, $3 or $4 million budgets and overseeing these and overseeing the grant funding. And obviously that's going to have a real translation when you're running your own business and you know that you've got a handle then on how it is that you manage the money and the finances and the different aspects of getting funding for your business. So you're really just looking at how can I translate what I already have into something that could support me as an entrepreneur. The next big section of the business owner profile, and this is one that I think is really, really important to think through because it's going to be the foundation for a lot of the other considerations, and we call this section the conditions for success. And in this is where you're going to start to list what is it that you're looking specifically to get out of self-employment. So what kind of income do you need to see? What kind of income do you have, all the sources of income you currently have coming in, additional income you'd like to receive from the business, if you're receiving health care. So if you're on right now, if you're on company health care and you're thinking about leaving your job and you're not sure what health care option is out there for you, or if you're receiving SSI or SSDI or you're on Medicaid or you're on Medicare, what we want to make sure we can do is analyze how can you maintain access to the health insurance that you need as you move from wage employment or if you're currently unemployed into entrepreneurship. So it's really important to get those things down. I really stress to people the importance, too, of looking at that monthly income consideration. It's really easy when you start planning for yourself to run a business to get very excited by an idea and to downplay the amount of money that you need. But it's important to really set a hard, fast, here's what it is I'm looking to achieve, and I can't really violate this. I need to, if the business that I'm looking into isn't going to actually hit those numbers, how can I tweak it? What service could I add? How could I change it so that I know that launching this business will actually support me in the manner in which I need to be supported? I always say it, you know, it takes just as much time and energy to launch a bad business as it does to launch a good one. And so you really want to make sure that your planning efforts are going into the right end, right? You don't want to spend all of this time and energy and invest funds in launching something that ultimately doesn't hit the way that you want it to hit. You can look also then again at some of the natural skills and the interest and the things that you outlined in that first section, you know, when you were looking at your past and your work experiences and what worked and what didn't work, and what of those things are you really hoping to bring into business for yourself, right? So you could have a ton of experience, like the nurse that I was telling you about could have had loads of experience in the healthcare field, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the direction that she wants to go. Right? Maybe she's always just been really good with people, and she really wants somehow to get in there and do more direct contact with people, but not in the health setting. So you're just looking at what is it that you've outlined that you're really hoping to be able to bring into this business on a day-to-day basis. The next big issue or area is what we call impairment-related conditions for employment. And again, this is another one to really think through. And I always tell people it's a time to be really honest. So you want to think about what are some of the challenges associated with your disability that are going to come to play in the business or in running a business for yourself. If you're somebody who has some good hours during the day and some bad hours during the day, and maybe you don't know exactly which will be which, you're probably going to do better if you're in a business that doesn't have really tight deadlines or timelines, or maybe has less stringent, you know, number of hours you have to be there, right? There are certain businesses that if you say, I'm going to be a customer service type business and the phone lines are open from 8 to 5, somebody has to answer those phones from 8 to 5. Right. Whereas I worked with a woman who experienced a lot of health issues. She used a wheelchair. She experienced a lot of health issues. She was great on the computer, really great with accounting and Excel and spreadsheets, all of these fabulous skills. But she was on a lot of medication, and it was really hard for her to know when she was going to have a good day or when she was going to have a bad day. So it was really important when we were trying to set up her business to create a business that allowed that sort of flexibility. So when you're thinking this section through, again, it's not to be negative, and it's certainly not to say, how does disability limit me? But it is to say, you know, with self-employment and entrepreneurship, you have the opportunity to create in a way that you rarely do in wage employment. You really have the opportunity to build something around you that just fits you and works for you. I worked with another woman who also experienced some health issues, and she couldn't be up and about all day long every day, and she wound up starting a business within a business. She was selling Red Hat merchandise, and so she co-located within another business, and they had a little part at the back of the store where she was able to put an easy chair, and she could go back and just lie down when she needed to, but the merchandise was still tended because she was co-located within another business. So there was somebody else there in the business who could handle customers if they came in, and she had the opportunity to go in the back and rest. Fit beautifully, given that she had created this business for herself, would have been much more challenging probably to sell that to an employer. So again, what you're trying to do is just get a handle on all of these different issues that may crop up from time to time so that you can make sure when you're designing the business, you design it around them so that they don't actually cause problems with the business running successfully. And then just any other family or personal considerations. It's always good, I think, for any entrepreneur to just think these things through. We say there is this sort of myth of entrepreneurship out there that in order to be a successful business owner, you have to get up every day and run and charge through the world and work 90-hour weeks. And the reality is that's not true. I run my own business, and I rarely just leap out of bed in the morning ready to go. But there are things that you may have to know. You know, if you have kids and you have to be home and you have to stop at 6 o'clock every night or weekends are not an option, those are really important considerations when you're designing the structure of whatever your business will be. While we're talking about the monthly income and the health insurance, I just wanted to do a really, really quick overview of some of the different benefit programs. My understanding is that probably the majority of the MS Society members who are on this call, if they are receiving benefits, are most likely receiving SSDI. So I'm going to talk a little bit about SSDI, but I'm going to talk a little bit about SSI too, just in case that applies to anybody. I'm guessing most of you are fairly familiar with how wage income and SSDI income works. So they're actually, with the SSDI program, there aren't any resource limits. They're only looking at the amount of money that you earn. And with wages, if you're out there working for somebody else, they're looking at the gross wages that are earned on a monthly basis. With self-employment, they're looking at this figure called net earnings from self-employment. And net earnings from self-employment is actually pretty close to the net profit of the business. And net profit, if you're not sure, net profit is just, you know, whatever the business sells minus whatever the business expenses are, and then the remainder is your net profit. And you can either have a profit or a loss. So if your expenses are more than your income, then you have a loss. If your income is more than your expenses, you have a profit. So that's the net profit. There's a slight tax break that the IRS gives you if you're self-employed, and that's for the FICA contribution that an employer would make on your behalf if you were working for somebody else. So you actually get a tax break given that you have to make your full FICA contribution on your own with self-employment. And the way they calculate that tax break is they take the net profit and they multiply it by 0.9235. And that's for the IRS, and then Social Security honors that as well. So whether you're getting SSI or SSDI, they're looking at this net earnings from self-employment figure. So that's the starting point for how they consider the impact of your self-employment income on your eligibility for a DI cash benefit. If you're in your trial work period, it only counts as a trial work period month if the monthly NESI is less than $720. Or there's this one weird little tricky thing with SSDI and self-employment where if you work 80 hours or more, I wrote that wrong on that slide. Sorry, correct that on your slides. Trial work period is monthly NESI less than 720. I got less both. Monthly NESI more than $720, or if you work 80 hours or more, that counts as a trial work period month with SSDI. Once you get past your trial work period months and you're looking at that substantial gainful activity figure, the SGA of $1,000 a month, and again, I'm talking as though people know all of these rules. It's always hard to know how familiar people are with Social Security. If you have any specific questions with this, please feel free to email, and I'll help guide you through it. But once you finish your trial work period and you get into where they're looking at, are your earnings more than this figure they call substantial gainful activity, which is $1,000 a month this year, there are a couple of work incentives that apply that are specifically related to self-employment. The first thing, impairment-related work expenses, are applicable to either self-employment or wage employment, and those are anything that's related to your disability that's necessary to go to work. The trick with impairment-related work expenses and self-employment is that almost all of them are actually already business expenses. So if you had to pay for specialized transportation or you had to pay a driver to drive you, if you were wage employed, that would count as an IRWI. That's the acronym, an IRWI. If you're self-employed, that just counts as a business expense anyway. If they can be either a business expense or Social Security work incentive, it tends to be better to take them off as a business expense because then that lowers your net profit and it lowers your tax, you know, your taxable income for the IRS, and people like to get as many business expenses in as they can usually. But sometimes some of the medical, you know, co-pays on medication can count as IRWIs, and those usually aren't business expenses. So it's important to know about those. But the really big cool ones with SSDI are these two things called unpaid help and unincurred business expenses. So if some of the different resources that we talk about, say vocational rehabilitation, was to purchase a copier, you were going to run a high-speed copying business for a recording studio, which somebody we worked with did that, and they were going to buy the copier for you. You can't deduct the copier expense from your profit and loss statement. The IRS doesn't care because you didn't pay for it. So since you didn't pay for it, it doesn't count as a business expense. But Social Security recognizes that artificially inflates the profit of your business, so you actually can deduct it from your countable income for Social Security, which is really cool. And if it's big equipment purchases like that, you can depreciate it over time. If you're getting any unpaid help, so if you have accountants who are friends of yours who are helping you, if you have husbands or children or spouses that are going to help you with marketing or drive you around and you're not actually paying them because they're just helping you, again, you can't deduct that from the IRS, but you can deduct it from your countable income for SSDI. So what we find are people can be earning, particularly when they're self-employed, a lot of times way over that SGA amount, way over that $1,000 a month, but still have their countable income be less than SGA. So that's just something to know. With SSI, and I don't actually have a lot of information on SSI in here, I think I'm going to talk a little bit about PASS towards the end, but if you have specific questions on SSI and how SSI and self-employment work, please just feel free to email me. The next sections of the business owner profile go through production and management considerations. You're not going to be able to fill these things out until you actually know what the business is going to do. So the first half of the business owner profile, you're just collecting information and you're getting an idea of what is it that you're hoping to do and how can I pull all of these different skills and background and experiences together and come up with some sort of an idea for what my business might do. As you're generating those ideas and you're getting them down on paper, the next step is to really research them. Best mechanism for researching them is talk to other people who are doing similar things. So if you're interested in starting a staffing agency for hospitals, you need to talk to other people who are providing that kind of a service and really learn about what does it take on a day-to-day basis. As you're learning more about what that company needs and what it takes to run it and what the potential income is, then you're going back to the business owner profile that you developed and saying, does this actually fit me? Does this meet my need? Does this match some of the impairment-related considerations that I had? Okay. When you're crystallizing and solidifying the idea, then you can come through and you can start, once you've picked the idea, for saying just what's it going to take on a day-to-day basis to run this business. And you can think about things like your production considerations, you know, if you actually have to make something, what are all the different steps involved in actually providing the service or producing the good? What are all the different management components that are going to be involved? And the reason you're detailing them is because you're trying to make sure that you actually have what you need to do all of them. So again, if I was talking about the person who wanted to start the retail shop and she knew she might not be able to be physically at the cash register from 8 to 5 every day, what we know is we need a contingency plan for that. So you're looking at what's it going to take on a day-to-day basis so you can then match that against what it is you think you're going to be able to bring to the business and then figure out where the gaps are. And once we figure out the gaps, then we can start figuring out how do we fill them. So the business owner profile just goes through all of these different things that you can think through and whether you're going to be doing it, if you need support, and then who could potentially help you with the different parts. Okay, so now we're going to talk about just different potential funding resources that could potentially be available to assist people in starting businesses. So there is state vocational rehabilitation. There are one-stop individual training accounts. There are individual development accounts. And then there is this SSA plan to achieve self-support or a PASS, which can be applicable if you receive certain benefits pictures. And I'm just going to talk through each of these sort of briefly to give you an idea of what the possibilities are. With the state vocational rehabilitation agencies, every state does have a vocational rehabilitation agency, and they do provide a really wide variety of services that can help people with disabilities secure work. So they can help pay for education, they can pay for training courses, and they are mandated at a national level. So RSA is the agency that oversees state vocational rehabilitation programs, the Rehab Services Administration. And in the Rehab Services Act, self-employment is required as an employment outcome. So every state VR agency does somehow have to support self-employment. The challenge occurs with the fact that other than saying that, there's not a whole lot of guidance in RSA. So what we tend to see is just significant variation from state to state in terms of what those actual self-employment policies are. I live in Florida. In Florida, there is no funding cap whatsoever, so no match is required. So any customer of VR, state VR, could come in and say, I'm interested in starting a business. If they write an actual business plan, if the business plan is approved, there's no limit on the amount of money that that the state VR can provide. Other states, it's a lot more stringent. So there are some states that may have, I think in Alaska, there's a $5,000 cap on the funding, and people have to put up at least $2,500 to draw down $5,000. And then over $5,000, $5,000 to $10,000, then they have to put up another percentage. In New York, I think the funding cap is $10,000, and there's a 10% match required. So unfortunately, I can't give you an overview of exactly what services and supports are required or available through each of your state VR agencies on this call, but I can help you pinpoint the specific policy for your state, and I can tell you that every state does support self-employment. In almost all cases, a business plan is going to be required. So in order to draw down this funding, you actually have to do all the homework. You have to come up with the idea. You have to do the market research, develop the business financials, and then submit the plan to your vocational rehabilitation counselor. Almost all state policies, and I think this is actually mandated by RSA 2, say that they can actually pay for technical assistance in the development of that business plan. That's not something that they always throw out as an offer when people walk through the door, but know that that's usually in there so that if you did want some assistance with developing your plan, there should be a way to actually access that and get those resources to you. If you can connect with VR, if you can actually access the funds, I always say people pay for their free money, and you pay for your free money with time and energy, right? These systems are never very easy or user-friendly to work with. So it will probably take longer. You will probably have to jump through more hoops. But the benefit of working with a state VR agency is that the money doesn't have to be repaid. So it is an access to funds. That if you can go through the hoops, if you can meet the requirements, you can get support for the business that you don't have to go out and take a loan out to get. And so that makes it, I think, a really valuable resource for people. Some other things just to know about it is that there is a possibility, and some of your states probably are on what they call an order of selection, when the funds in the state VR pot are insufficient to meet the numbers of potential customers, they actually have to start doing, it's essentially a wait list, but they would never call it a wait list, but where they're serving the highest priority need first, so they're going to serve people with the most significant disabilities first. The other thing that they can do is they can require a cost share for some people. If you're receiving SSI or SSDI, you cannot be, no cost share can be required. So anyway, just know you could be in a state where they're on an order of selection. That's possible. And depending on your own financial picture, there could be some share of cost involved. But there still can be great access to resources. And certainly education, training, all of those kind of things almost always are excluded from the personal contribution. If there was a state that required a match for VR funds, that would be for things like startup items, so equipment or tools or business licenses, whatever that startup picture is, but not for the actual training courses. So, again, it can be a great resource for people. Every state also has some Workforce Investment Act program. Typically, these go by the names of one-stop centers or one-stop training centers or Workforce One, but the idea is it's where people who are seeking employment services can all go to one place, and so a lot of times it's where people will go to file for unemployment insurance. They used to be called in a lot of places the Department of Labor, so you'd go down to the Department of Labor, and they have databases of resources and employers and potential jobs that all community members can access. They also, at these one-stop centers, they do have a level of service. So they have like the general core services that they offer to any community members, which are, again, if you want a job, you know, leads or basic computer courses or job training skills, you know, basic stuff that anybody can go in and use. And then they have a more intensive level of service, and then they have a most intensive level of service. If you identify yourself as a community member with a disability, then it's possible that you can get access to the more intensive services, so you could get specialized training. If you're eligible for the most intensive level of services, they do have these things called one-stop individual training accounts, or ITAs. And there's a set of funds that can help people get back into the workforce. In a few states, people have actually managed to access these to help them start businesses. So this is not the kind of thing that it's a 100% guarantee, but there's a pot of funds. A lot of times it's about $3,000 to $5,000 that it is possible that you could use as a resource for your business and to get your business launched. So it's definitely worth connecting with them. In most one-stop centers, they have what they call a disability program navigator or a DPN. If there's not one in your particular center, there's one that serves your center, even if they're not located there. So that's probably the best place to start, is to track down who is your disability program navigator. And I can't remember. I'll look in a second, or I'll try to look right now. I'm not sure if these are on the sheet that Barbara prepared for you. But if they're not, we'll get you a link to where you can find the disability program navigators in your area. There also are these fabulous accounts called individual development accounts. And, again, these are things that are all going to have their own stipulations on. A lot of times there are the IDAs are actually set up. It's an economic development initiative, these individual development accounts. So they tend to be targeting more lower-income people. So income and resources can all play a factor or play a role in whether or not you're eligible for these. But most states do have them. What an IDA is actually a matched savings account. So what happens is an individual contributes earned income. It almost always has to be earned income, so money you've been making. You're out there if you have a wage job, or even as your business launches, you could contribute some of the earned income from the business. And depending on the actual IDA program, there can be a match available of either one for one, dollar for dollar, or they'll match it $2 to every $1 or $3 for every $1. So if you set aside $100 a month for 10 months, you'd have $1,000 in there, and then they could provide a $3,000 match. If you have a wage job, and my understanding from Barbara was that some of you may still be working, you're just trying to figure out what to do and looking at making a change, it could be a good time to look into this so you actually have a source of income coming in. If you could be accumulating it, then that money could actually be used to help you launch the business. The website that's listed at the bottom of that slide, cfed.org, you don't even have to type in that really, really long link, although hopefully you can just click on it in your PowerPoint. But if you just go to www.cfed.org, there's a drop-down menu along the left where you can start to sort by state and figure out what IDAs are available in your states. Some states have loads of IDAs. Some states really don't have very many. It just varies a lot place to place. And then the last thing I want to tell you about, and this is going to be for people who either are receiving SSI or people who would be eligible for SSI except for the fact that the SSDI check is too high. So the way that it works with SSI is essentially a financial, it's a needs-based program. So in order to be eligible for SSI, you have to meet the disability criteria, right? You have to meet the disability determination, but you also have to show financial need. So there are real specific requirements surrounded by that. You can't have more than $2,000 in personal assets, retirement accounts, all of those kind of things count as personal assets. And also they're going to look at all the different sources of income that you have coming in. If your income is low enough, they'll give you a cash benefit. And the maximum amount of a cash benefit from the federal SSI program is $674. There are people who actually meet the requirements, so maybe their assets are below that $2,000 limit. They obviously are meeting the criteria for disability, but maybe they have an SSDI check that's $1,000 a month. And so since that $1,000 a month is over the SSI limit, they're not eligible for SSI. Okay. PASS is a program where you can actually set aside the earned income that would be used to reduce your SSI check in your business account. And since you're putting it in the business account, it no longer counts as income. And that means you get the full SSI check. So it's essentially, if you're already receiving SSI, it's essentially a matching funds program. PASS is hugely beneficial for people who are running businesses because it just puts cash in your business account. Resources like VR, they can buy stuff, right? So they could buy you equipment for your business, they could buy tools, they could pay for a license, but they can't just put cash in your account in case you have an expense that comes up on down the road that you didn't think about, but you need a little bit of money to actually pay for, okay? So it's a huge resource for people who are already on SSI and launching businesses, and you definitely, definitely want to assess for PASS potential if you're already on SSI. The other thing just to know about is there are ways, again, if you're receiving a DI check that's over the limit but you meet the other criteria, there are times that people will put that DI check, they'll write the PASS application, and they'll say, I'm going to contribute my DI to PASS, which is your business account if you're launching a business, And if you put that money in the PASS account, since it no longer counts as income, you're eligible for SSI. So you're eligible for the SSI check of $674, plus you're eligible for Medicaid. The numbers have to work, so it's a little bit trickier if you're receiving a bigger SSDI check, because obviously if you're getting a $1,000 SSDI check and you go down to $674 on SSI, there's a difference. If you pick up Medicaid, sometimes that can help cover it. And if the business is projecting some income, a lot of times that can make up the difference as well. But we want people to know that this could, in fact, be a resource to them, because if there's any way to make PASS work, it is a fantastic source of money for your business, free money, which we always like. So I know that's a really, really, really quick overview of that, but there are two websites listed on the slide, passplan.org and passonline.org, that can give you a lot more information, and passplan.org will actually show you examples of passes that people got approved and how they use the funds, and it's just a great resource. The last thing just to think about are all the different other resources that are out there that can help you through this process. So that every community, every state, there are business resources that exist in the community. If you're in a really little rural community, you may not have a resource right there, but most of them have online components anymore so that people can access from anywhere in the state. Loads that can help you with the business planning process, trying to help firm up ideas, give you feedback on business structures and taxes, and help you when you're trying to develop your financial projections. Some of the most well-known of these are SCORE, which stands for Service Corps of Retired Executives, the Small Business Development Center, or the SBDC, the Women's Small Business, I always want to call it the Small Women's Business Center, but that's ridiculous. Okay, so the Women's Small Business Center, Small Business Administration, a lot of these other programs fall actually underneath the SBA, and most of them will offer classes as well as individual counseling. They have fabulous databases, so if you wanted to research an industry, you know, if you wanted to start an you wanted to start baking your famous cookie recipe from your home and distribute it online with sales because you thought that would fit you beautifully. You could be home working from your own kitchen, you know, but you're trying to create something that's going to be an online company, and how do you go about that, and how do you begin to get some industry statistics? They have great databases that are really expensive to buy if you have to buy on your own. And again, a lot of them have online counseling. The other things just to know about, again, family members and friends, I mean, this is a team approach. There's really nothing involved in self-employment that doesn't involve a full team. Use the team. People have great resources attached to them. When I was starting my business, I mean, I couldn't have done it without my family, just people to brainstorm, knock ideas off of, help me with the things I don't do as well. You don't have to do everything independently to be a successful entrepreneur. And in fact, I would guess there's not a single successful entrepreneur out there that does do everything independently. WIPA, y'all probably know the WIPA project. I know Barbara's talked about it, but the Work Incentives Planning and Assistance can be really hugely resourceful, or a great resource when you're looking at the different benefits that you receive if you have concerns about health care or cash benefits and launching a business and how all of those fit together. And again, then just the basics, you know, accountants, lawyers, usually if you're working with a Small Business Development Center or some of the generic resources, they'll have people on staff that can help you with specific questions. You know, do you need to form a limited liability company, or could you have liability insurance? And, you know, how are you going to address some of these different issues? And then the last one that I'll just mention again are these community business mentors. So I cannot stress enough that I think one of the best sources and resources when you're investigating different businesses are people who actually are running similar businesses. And most of the time people think you're not going to be able to get that information, that people will be too competitive. But what we find is if you make enough phone calls, you will find people who are willing to talk to you. People love to talk about what they did and how they got started. And that can save you years of a learning curve if you can get somebody who tells you their own trajectory and the lessons that they learned along the way. So I think that's it. And then we can open the line for questions.
I think we can start questions, Alma.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number 1 key on your phone. Again, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Diane. Go ahead, Diane.
Hello. I need the PowerPoint, the information about tonight's call. I didn't receive.
Okay, Diane, which chapter are you from? And we can take care of that and send that to you. Just let us know which chapter.
Diane, if you email your chapter.
That's true.
Yeah, email your chapter.
Yeah, we dropped the call. We dropped the line.
Yeah, email your chapter and let them know that you did not get the PowerPoint. We're going to give our contact information out at the end of the program, so you can contact one of us as well.
Our next question comes from Jane. Go ahead, Jane.
I need to know, when you say pathplan.org, would you spell what you're saying? Are you saying P as in Peter, A-S-S, pathplan?
Yes. Yeah, P as in Peter, A as in Apple, S as in Sam, S as in Sam, P as in Peter, L as in laugh, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, .org.
Okay, and another question or a comment. I heard what you said about the PowerPoint presentation. I do not believe I'm in receipt of that. I haven't been on my computer in 2 days, but I was not in receipt of it at that time. So I can contact who to get the PowerPoint presentation on this call?
You can contact either Steve or Christina or myself. We'll give our contact information out at the end of the call.
Our next question comes from Frank. Go ahead, Frank.
Thank you. I am not currently receiving the Social Security benefits of any kind. However, I am unemployed and have been for 7 months. I'm interested in the IDA, or the individual, what?
Development account?
Those accounts, the IDA
mm-hmm.
account.
Mm-hmm.
And just want to know how I can find out more about it within my own state. Do I go through DRS?
The best recommendation I would have is to go to that CFED website, which is www.c as in cat, f as in Frank, e as in elephant, d as in dog,
yeah.
.org. And if you there's a drop-down box to the left where you can sort by state. And you have to, a lot of times with the IDAs, you have to do a little digging. So to try to figure out which IDAs are available in your state, the VR agency probably would not know about them. A lot of the IDAs by default, almost everyone, if you go and you read their policy, it'll say they can be used for home ownership or to start a business. But almost all of them are slanted towards home ownership. I mean, you can use it for business. That's just not how they're promoting them, if that makes sense. So the other resource that you might try within your state would be the housing authority, because they may have a better handle on what the IDAs are out there, just because the majority of people tend to use them for home ownership. But if you're not finding what you need, again, feel free to email. I can either give my email address to your chapter leads or email your chapter lead, and they'll get the information to me, and we'll try to help you figure out what's available in your area. And then vocational rehabilitation also may be a possibility for you, too. So you don't have to be receiving SSI or SSDI to be eligible for vocational rehabilitation.
Our next question comes from Stephanie. Stephanie, go ahead.
My question is, I heard you mention that you could only have $2,000 in the bank.
For SSI?
Right.
So for SSI?
No, well, my question is that if I'm going to apply to any of these programs, does it have anything to do with the money that I have in the bank, like my retirement money? That has nothing to do with it, right?
For eligibility for SSI, and only SSI, the retirement.
No, I have SSD. I have SSD.
Exactly. So no. The retirement money wouldn't count against you. Again, some state VR agencies will have a financial participation calculation, but if you're receiving SSDI, you're exempt from that. So if you're receiving SSDI or you're eligible for it, your retirement account should not impact your eligibility for VR either.
Oh,
and it would only be SSI. And I should say, just because that question came up, if any of y'all are receiving SSI and you want to stay eligible for SSI or Medicaid, there is an exemption or an exclusion for resources that are held in a business account. It's called property essential to self-support. So if you were receiving SSI and you launched a business, as long as the business was a sole proprietorship or a partnership, the business resources would not knock you off of SSI.
Okay.
So just to know.
Our next question comes from Lori. Lori, go ahead.
Yes, Lo. You mentioned that the business resources wouldn't knock you off of SSI, but I'm just wondering if you are on that and you launch your own business, is there a cap with the personal income that you would take from your own business and still be able to maintain the Social Security benefits, disability benefits that you have?
And again, this is where we get into kind of tricky SSI and SSDI questions that unfortunately are so legitimate, but it's timing. So with SSDI, they're going to look at that, what they call the substantial gainful activity figure, which is, you know, they assess for self-employment income. They'll look at your annual net profit, and they'll divide it by 12, and they'll give you average monthly income, which is nice for businesses because it settles out that kind of, you know, variance that you can see from month to month. And then you can apply the work incentives that we talked about. So you could apply unpaid help. You could apply any unincurred business expenses. You could apply any impairment-related expenses. And as long as once those incentives are applied, the net profit is underneath that $1,000 a month, you're going to maintain eligibility for a cash benefit. With SSI, they're actually going to take that same figure, that annual figure of net profit, and divide it by 12, and then they're going to run what they call accountable income calculation on it. So they subtract $65 and divide it by 2. So they count a little less than 1 of every $2 that you earn. At some point, if the business profit gets to be about $1,500 a month, you'll zero out of an SSI check. So because they're subtracting that 2-for-1 calculation, but you could still be eligible for Medicaid. There's a state threshold amount for Medicaid that's usually for most states in the neighborhood of $27,000 to $36,000 per year. And as long as you're underneath that amount, you're still eligible for Medicaid, even if you don't get the cash benefit.
Our next question comes from Howard. Howard, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if the business you're starting is a nonprofit and that business doesn't really show profit as, gainable profit for the company, does it work the same?
You know, nonprofits, a great question, and nonprofits are actually really interesting because technically nonprofits in the eyes of the IRS and in the eyes of Social Security are not actually self-employment. So if you launch a nonprofit, the nonprofit technically is owned by the board, not the individual. And so the self-employment rules don't apply. So then you're actually looking at the income that you receive from the nonprofit, and that's treated in the same way that wage income would be. So you lose some of the possible advantages are associated with if you're in a nonprofit. But one of the other things is, you know, you can certainly do what a nonprofit would do in a for-profit company. So that's always something to think about. The other thing is sometimes people think that they can control their income with self-employment in a way that will kind of trick the system. I mean, I'm not saying that's what you're saying. I'm just throwing this out there for people to think about. If you're in a sole proprietorship or a partnership or an LLC that's taxed as a sole proprietorship or a partnership, which are really the self-employment types of companies, they're going to actually assess you for Social Security purposes and for IRS purposes on what the net profit of that business is, not on what you pay yourself. So it's just an important distinction.
Our next question comes from Bertha. Bertha, go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. I miss most of the program, so I'm wondering if it would be possible that I can get an overview of the conference that was held tonight. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend the whole thing.
Well, we can send you a CD, Bertha. At the end of all, we're going to have CDs of all the programs, so I can mail that out to you so that you can have it, okay?
Our next question comes from Zaith. Zaith, go ahead.
Hello. I have a two questions. The first question is, I do not have an internet, so I do not have any capabilities of getting a hold of any of the paperwork that you're talking about. Other question is, I want to know, could I get a partnership with a company that I can sell my idea to? Would that be available?
So you have a business idea and you'd like to work in conjunction with another company?
Well, right now I have the idea all in my head. I know it's not in my head. I put it down on paper. But now I want to take that idea to a company to sell the idea to, or to come in partnership with it.
You know, since we don't really have time to get into the specifics of what your idea is, I mean, to answer your question, yeah, of course, theoretically, absolutely. But what might be a really good resource for you would be to tap into one of your local community business resources. So maybe make an appointment if you have a small business development center or a community college that has a business program or a college that has a business program, to go in and sit down and really talk to them about what your idea is. They're very good at not stealing ideas. So that, you know, that's one of the things that they hold confidentiality very high. So it's a safe place to go, but they might be able to really help you brainstorm specifically with your idea and what the opportunities for partnering with other companies might be. That's number one. Number two, in terms of the no internet, Barbara, I'm guessing, is there a way just to get hard copy of materials?
Yes, the chapters were supposed to be sending out hard copies to those who did not supply an email address. So, you know, again, I'm going to say this. We will give our contact information out after Beth is finished in a few minutes, and you can contact us and let us know where you'd like the material sent.
Our next question comes from Priscilla. Priscilla, go ahead.
Hi. I'm 27. I'm on disability, and I've been on disability since 2008. I'm not comfortable with being on disability, but I also acknowledge that I have extreme fatigue and that I'm not the way I used to be before the MS. So I'm currently looking on Rat Race Rebellion for business opportunities. I have a lot of great ideas, but I think that's what's best for me at the moment is to work through a company, but at home. Like, I can't travel, I can't commute, and I can't commit myself to something that's inflexible. Like, it needs to be something that's very flexible. So
right.
I wanted to know if you know of, like, any websites that I could go to. I'm not interested in starting my own business just as of yet because I have too many ideas, but I'd like to start making some type of money because I'm struggling with my 7-year-old, so...
Yeah, you know, I don't know of any off the top of my head that are just really great work-at-home opportunities, but if you'll shoot an email to your chapter director and get me your email address, if I think of any and I'll float that question around, I'll be happy to send them to you. You know, and then the other thing would be just to, again, start looking within the field of interest, you know, if you have whatever you have background or experience in, maybe connecting with some local companies and talking to them about work-from-home possibilities. You just never know. You know, the world is becoming a little bit more virtual, and so you may be able to pull something up that way. They do talk sometimes about teletype. I think it's teletype, you know, closed captioning. I think that's stuff that people can do from home that tends to pay pretty well, but I don't really know a lot of specifics about that. So if I can think of any general areas, I'll be happy to send them to you.
I think we have time for one more question.
Our final question comes from Phil. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, how are you doing? My question really is just how long should we be preparing, you know, how long does it take to get a grant is the question, typically.
A grant or, I mean, are you thinking funding from VR or?
Funding from a grant, let's say. I mean, if you're filling out a grant application and all that stuff.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I think it probably varies a lot grant to grant. A lot of times the first challenge is just finding the grant, right? So actually figuring out what the grant is. But usually there are guidelines with it. So if they have an actual application out there or an RFP, you put it in and they'll say this is when the deadline is and this is how long it's going to take to review. I mean, I would say generally a few months, but, you know, that could vary a lot depending on what the different pots of money are.
Okay. I think we're getting close to the top of the hour, so I'm going to say thank you to Beth for all this wonderful information. I've learned a tremendous amount tonight myself, and I know that it's pretty complicated, but you really did make it seem a whole lot easier than I would think to start a business. So I hope the members who've listened in tonight feel the same way. And again, if we didn't get to your questions, I'm going to give my contact information out and then have Steve and Christina give theirs out. You can reach me, Barbara McKeon, that's McKeon, at 212-453-3218, or email me at bmckeon, McKeon, at msnyc.org. Steve, you want to give out yours?
Sure. My contact information, my telephone number is 202-296-5363. And via email is snissen, N as in Nancy, I, S as in Sam, S as in Sam, E-N, at msandyou.org. Christina?
Hi, it's Christina. You can reach me at 215-271-1500. And my email is Christina, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-A dot Forster, F as in Frank, O-R, S as in Sam, T-E-R, at P-A-E dot N-M-S-S dot org.
Great, thank you. And if we just can hang on for just two more minutes, we have just a quick six-question survey. We really appreciate it if you could participate in that, and I'm going to turn that over to Alma, and thank you all for attending this evening. Alma?
This begins our polling session. Our first question, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no. The poll for this question is now closed. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, how would you rate the speakers? Press 1 for excellent, press 2 for good, press 3 for fair, press 4 for poor. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, press 2 for good, press 3 for fair, press 4 for poor. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, as a result of this teleconference, I know what I need to consider when thinking about starting a business. Press 1 if you strongly agree. Press 2 if you agree. Press 3 if you agree somewhat. Press 4 if you disagree. Press 5 if you strongly disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question. This teleconference provided me with possible funding resources. Press 1 if you strongly agree. Press 2 if you agree. Press 3 if you agree somewhat. Press 4 if you disagree. Press 5 if you strongly disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare for our final question. Our final question. As a result of this teleconference, I now know where to go to get assistance with developing a business plan. Press 1 if you strongly agree. Press 2 if you agree. Press 3 if you agree somewhat. Press 4 if you disagree. Press 5 if you strongly disagree. The poll is now closed. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation.
Barbara?